he was like, I can do better. And then he made women, and he was like, that's a little much. And then he made gay men, and he was like, yeah, that's the right one.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish. Good evening and welcome back to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can access that live stream every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. On today's show, we're going to welcome back David Ellison. He is, of course, the author of Santander, Rambling on Borrowed Time, a unique memoir, travelogue, and reflection on life, which he wrote a while back and released. After the release of his book, a colleague of his reached out to David and suggested that an additional chapter be written with very important parts that were not included in the book that this individual thought was pertinent. And so he did. So we're going to have him back tonight to talk about those two chapters. And of course, my name is Tom. I'm your host, and I'm always here with my amazing co-host, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to The Dish. So we're back. We took a week off last week.
Feels like it's been forever. I was like looking through the notes. I'm like, oh, do I know this stuff?
So we took a week off last week.
They was going through it.
Yeah, all of us.
I was down too. To do it though.
Yeah, but you were a mess.
Yes, but I was like down to be messy.
She was a real mess. But no, so we took a week off and we were like, you know what? It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. We were all together. We had a slumber party, and so we just hung out, and you know what? It was really nice. It was a really nice break. It's August 3rd today.
It is.
And, you know, in 6 weeks, fall's here, so
Big day is 3 months away.
Yeah, and that's right. And we need to make sure that we make the best of the time that we have, the nice warm weather before fall comes in, and of course, winter and all that good stuff.
So hot.
But before we move forward,
I will welcome the winter.
I need to point out that Chris is wearing a shirt, and his shirt is amazing. I need you to get up a little bit and maybe go in front so that they can read it. I'll tell you if you're standing. Perfect. And it says, vote. Remove stubborn orange stains. Yeah. It is literally awesome. Thank you, Chris, for wearing that today.
Yeah.
And for those of you who viewed the live stream video last week, I have the same exact tank top on, but it is washed. I just want to point that out
because
I edited the video today.
I got some Tide for you if you need it.
Nasty. But you know, here we are. So we've got a very interesting show. Again, a reoccurring or returning guest, which I'm super excited about. This man, I truly love his energy. He's also very fun and outgoing, and he's done a lot of great work over the past, you know, 3 or 4 decades. So it's always good to have someone that has an educational background joining us, and also someone who's written a book, right? Because it just goes to show you that they take the time to really write down what it was that their life has been. And when you're thinking about memoirs, it really does. Like, people really do a really good job at documenting what it was that their life was like. And
imagine if I had to write a memoir.
It would be a bestseller.
Well, yeah, but I would have to write 2 books, and one of the books would probably just be called Steve.
And the other one would probably be called Stefan.
I was going to say there'd be different volumes of Steve.
Maybe it would be like Steve, no, but yes. And then Stefan, I gotta go.
And then a whole book dedicated to you getting trampled in New York. Oh, I still will never forget that.
Oh my God. And you lost your phone. So it's been a while since we told that story. You want to tell us a little bit about
what happened? It's going to be in her book.
Just very, very nonchalantly.
Yeah, I went to, what concert was that? It was some benefit concert in, New York.
Central Park.
In Central Park.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all like having a good time, whatever. We were in like the back of this massive crowd in Central Park. I mean, thousands of people. And all of a sudden, there was a big bang and or crash. And everybody started running from the front. And so people started getting trampled. People were trying to get out of the park. People thought there was a shooting, all this stuff. And of course, I'm with Paul. I'm with his sister. They get lifted up. They're like rushed out. Like
right.
they're running. I go down. I straight up go down.
The heels gave out.
And so like I'm underneath like a crowd of people.
Ass up.
A crowd of people running over top of me, and I'm literally laying there like, this is not how you're going to die. This is not how you're going to do it. And so, like, I force myself up, somehow got up while all these people were running over top of me, and I just started booking it. And I hid behind a tree, couldn't find my phone anywhere, finally found my phone. Well, no, finally I found somebody looking for their phone when I was looking for mine, and some guy returned it to... I called it. How did this happen? Hold on. Some guy... No,
someone called you.
No, no, no. This is what happened. So Jess, Paul's sister, called my phone because I didn't know anybody's number, right, besides my own. Mm-hmm. And the guy picked up. He's like, hey, I found this phone. Where are you? And she was like, well, where's my friend? Where's Nick? He's like, I don't know. I just found the phone. So he brought the phone to her. And then I finally found somebody who had a phone, and I called it. And she picked up, and I'm like, where are you? What's going on? I can't handle this.
I need a mimosa.
It was so bad. But I was, like, so bruised the next day. It was so terrible. And then Paul comes, like, walking down a hill with a limp. Like, we were a mess. It was a mess.
It's a scary situation,
right?
Yeah,
because that was following Las Vegas, wasn't it?
That's right.
Yeah,
it was shortly right after
so
Las
people
Vegas.
Hear a bang in a big crowd. Of course, they're going to freak the fuck out.
Yeah. My God, I will never, ever, ever go to a concert in a park like that ever again.
I mean, but just imagine being in a building, right? And where you've got chairs and stuff, and people are trying to climb over these chairs to get out to an exit. Ugh. And those exits sort of, because so you have like a horde of like this many people, and they're slowly converging into an exit. It's even worse.
I'll just never forget, like face down on the ground, I can't die like this.
Was your ass
not
up?
Like this.
I can't die like this. This is not how you're going to go.
That is too funny. I mean, it's not funny, but it is funny now, right? When you think about
but
it.
But like
in
when
retrospect.
I went down, all I could think in my head was people die.
Yeah, that's how people die.
People die from being trampled. I'm right. Like, I'm literally, and it was like slow mo. I'm like, I'm going down right now. This is happening. Like, I'm going
yeah,
down.
That's scary shit. That is scary shit.
But, you know, but in retrospect, you know, you look back and you laugh, but it's not a laughing matter. It's very serious. It's actually very, very intense.
There
right?
were shoes, there were
purses,
blankets,
phones, obviously.
Everywhere. I can't believe somebody actually like brought my phone back. Like it was a brand new iPhone X. I was like, I just bought that phone.
That so feeling. Expensive. Oh my God.
I could just picture Trish like going down slow-mo. It's like, first I was afraid, I was petrified. Then she hits the ground, she looks up, she's like, I will survive. And she's just crawling her
happened.
Way through.
That's kind of
yeah, that's
happened.
Right. The Wonder Woman came out.
Yeah, 100%. I did a twirl and I was up and I was behind a tree.
Lord have
but
mercy.
You know what's funny? It's like, that happened and I remember walking around looking for my phone and like seeing people that were just like so... like,
out of it.
Out of it, yeah. And like... just look, are you okay? Are you, everybody was checking in with everybody. Like humans like come together when they need to in a weird way. Like somebody bringing my phone back, like amazing.
There are but, good like, people out there.
It was just like, everybody was like, are you okay? Is everything okay? And
the problem is with the human race is that shit don't last. They come together when things go wrong and then give it a week or two. And
then boom, you're done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
No, you're not wrong.
It's like after 9/11, it's like you saw the country come together and then slowly but surely it's like once things, you know, political things start to happen, people sort of kind of start dividing very quickly. Yeah. And those investigations into what really transpired, you know, how the government reacted to 9/11 was really a key indicator on how quickly, you know, unity can become separation. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible. But it was very harrowing for us. And, you know, I'm glad that you were okay. And I'm glad that you're still here with us.
I'm a little emotionally damaged. But.
Yeah, well, but I don't think that had anything to do with that.
I mean, it had a little bit.
So you can use some vote to wash it away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of vote, if you're in Connecticut, August 11th is our primary. You have an option to do a mail-in ballot if, of course, you've actually sent out for one, or you can go into your local locations. Obviously, it's a primary. So make sure that you exercise that right. Go out and do your duty and do that. And then, of course, the most important date of all, November 3rd.
3 months away today.
That's right. You know, we go to the polls and decide if America is going to indeed have a new...
2 months.
Three.
Two.
August, September. No. Oh. Two.
August, September, October, November.
Yeah, exactly. 3 months. What the fuck are you talking about?
We still have all
we're
of August.
We're in August, so we have the whole month of August, the whole month of September, the whole month of October, and then we're in November.
Yeah, you're right, three.
Thank you for having my back. She made me second guess myself.
I know, but like I did.
I know. Like, I'm very disappointed in myself.
Yeah. Math is hard after cocktails.
I mean, you all were starting before I got.
Well, that's because you were late. So let's not go there.
She was busy
with what?
With vodka. No. I'm just gonna say that. But it is important. November 3rd is coming. It's right around the corner. So please, please make sure that you have a game plan. Make sure that you know you're registered. Go to your registrar's website and find out if you're registered, where you got to go and vote. You know, they're getting very sneaky. They're trying to figure out how to cancel, close, and use COVID as an excuse to suppress the vote. And so be very savvy and know what options you have in your state and do your duty, do your diligence, because it is literally at this point life or death. We already see what's happening.
Can you just say civic duty? Because every time you say duty, I think of poop.
Yes, civic duty. But poop is not wrong, right? Because you can also do the poop with your squatty potty.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's no shitting matter. Go vote. Figure out what you got to do.
Nailed it.
Find out where you're
freaking. That's kind of a crappy
pun. Yeah. I'm part of it.
I'm there, yeah.
I hate her. But anyway, so we've got a couple of stories before we bring our guest on. So I'm going to, of course, toss it.
We haven't even like, talked about our weekends.
Do you want to talk about those?
I mean, I don't really. Anybody?
See, but so why the hell would you mention it?
Well, I want to show you guys why I was late. I just sent it to you, what I had to take care of today.
Oh, his violin.
It's a cello.
Or his cello.
I bought a cello.
Okay,
last week.
So Christopher,
I had to get that taken care of today.
So why don't you tell us why you were late?
Because I don't know if anyone, I'm a woodwind and brass player, so I'm used to when you're tuning an instrument, you know, if you're playing the flute, you got to move the head joint in and out a little bit, or if you're playing trumpet or
you
horn.
Couldn't tune that shit on Tuesday?
No, I did. On Wednesday, I needed some help tuning it. So last Wednesday, I went back to the store to have them, because I don't play wind instruments, but there's tuning pegs at the top, mm-hmm. and then there are fine tuning pegs, and I was using the fine tuning peg. And I tuned it a little too far, and I heard a pop, and nothing broke, but the screw of the fine tuning peg like popped below the thing that holds it, and I can't get it adjusted, and I was afraid to break it, so I had to go get that checked out. So that's why I was late today. Yeah, but that's exciting.
Okay.
And I'm taking another class this semester, actually. I decided to.
You're forgiven, but that's one class, not four like you had before.
Four
so.
Or five.
Of course, it's probably on Monday at 6.
No, it's actually on Monday and Wednesday, and it's 10:30, 10:40 to 12. I took an early one for you girls.
Oh, I'm proud of you.
Yes, yes, yes.
Hopefully she'll get up.
All I got to do is roll over and open the MacBook. It's online. That's why I've taken it. But yeah, we can move into stories. I just wanted to say that's why I was late.
Okay. So would you like to give us an update, what you've been up to for the past...
All I've been doing is hanging out with you, so...
Yeah. Well, that's true.
That's exciting.
And she also had a bird in her closet, her basement.
A bird in my basement.
Mm-hmm. And then a kayak broke a window or something like that.
No, it's been a
week. We talked about the kayak.
No.
A kayak again? Another window breaking?
This kayak is like an omen.
I was like, with Pat's,
yeah,
Pat's
so,
boo?
So Pat broke his windshield with it and his date's windshield with it.
Right.
And then my neighbor accidentally knocked into it when he was like adjusting the tomato plant out front. And that went right through my basement window.
You're just going to like... open your closet one day and a kayak's just gonna come shooting out at you.
You're not wrong. It's crazy. And then like the other day I'm at home and all of a sudden I'm like, what the fuck is that sound? I kept hearing this sound. I'm sitting having a cup of coffee and
it was like, really a cocktail, but yeah, go ahead.
No, it was coffee
with alcohol.
Bailey's.
I'm sure I had to
be. No, but whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it sounds like it's coming from the basement. So I go downstairs and you know me, I see this, so my basement window and basement door butt up against one another, so like the window is kind of like closed off when the door is open, and I see this flapping thing behind the door, and of course, I freaked the fuck out.
Naturally.
And of course, I called my roommate, and I was like, when are you coming home? I need you home now. There's a bird. There's a bird in the basement. It's chirping now. He's like, you need to go downstairs and close the door. I was like, I don't know if I can.
Oh, my God.
He came home. He had that bird caught within, like, 2
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, it's probably like a little freaking finch, and you're treating it like it's a goddamn pterodactyl.
No, it was actually pretty big. It was, like...
It was... I think it was... What do you call those?
It was like the size of a starling.
Pigeon. Yeah, it could have been, but it was pretty big. When he showed me the picture, I was like, holy shit, he's holding it with two hands. It was big.
Yeah.
But yeah.
How the fuck did a bird get in my basement? So, of course, my dumbass looks it up online, and it's like a bad omen. And I'm like, why did I look that
Yeah, right, exactly.
I'm like thinking, like, maybe it's a good thing, you know, like you got a bird in your basement.
You're going to get home, you're going to hear a bang against the window, you're looking all of a sudden, all these birds no, are it's flying like, into your shit.
Like, I looked it up, it was like, death will be following this. Yeah. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I shouldn't have looked that up.
No, exactly.
Well,
no.
I think in your case, probably death happened first, and then the bird came later.
So, funny story. Not really funny, but funny enough. My grandpa...
Fuck her. Sorry, not your grandpa, Vladimir Putin. He showed up on my screen. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Terrible.
Yeah, sorry. Fuck Russia.
So we all know my grandma passed, but like my grandpa was like really interested in the fact that there was a bird in my basement. And I was like, why? He's like, I just want to know what kind it was. I was like, okay. So I was like, I think it's a starling. He's like, I think that's your grandma. I was like, what? Why would you say that? He's like, I don't know. It's just a funny feeling. And I was like, she was stuck in the window, and I wouldn't let her out.
You just closed the goddamn door on her.
Oh, my God. It was just like... but anyway.
But it happens. Yeah. You know, it happens. I mean, animal sightings in homes happen all the time. Thank God it wasn't a raccoon, and you're a freaking
animal. Well, I had one of those before.
Oh, my God. Oh. You know what I did, too? I locked the cat in the basement with the bird.
Thinking it's going to get the bird?
No, I didn't realize I locked a cat in the basement. And Pat was like, well, make sure the cat is upstairs, so, like, whatever. And I'm like, I can't find the cat anywhere. And I was like, shit.
Oops. There goes the bird. Open that basement door, and all of a sudden you're just going to see a dead bird on the stair, like the cat said, I brought it to you.
Oh, my God.
Because cats do that.
I know.
Outdoor cats.
But that cat doesn't like me, so it would probably, like, throw it at
That's
me.
That's true.
I would throw it at you, too.
I would also throw it
so
at you.
So cats, you know, do that. So when they like someone, they bring you things. So if you let them out, they go find, like, dead squirrels and birds or whatever, or kill them.
Yeah, I was like...
And then bring them to you. Shit. And they deliver them to you. Like, here, I brought you a gift. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, you can have it. Thank you. Yeah. But that's incredible.
End of the story. We got the bird out.
Okay.
And it flew away, and then it fell straight down.
Well,
there's your death.
No, it was so... I was like, I think it's broken. I think something's broken. But then it eventually actually got up and, like, flew away. But I think it was just really tired. But it was just, like, the weirdest fucking thing. There was a bird in my goddamn basement.
It happens. It happens. Listen, there could be worse things that show up in your basement. Or you could be, like crazy scared of things in your basement, like boilers and stuff, like when you like grew up watching like Nightmare on Elm Street and Freddy Krueger and all that stuff. So
I mean, there are scarier things. Trish could open the basement door and there could be a Steve down there. Like there probably
is.
No, not the ones you put down there.
Yeah, not the ones that you like try to keep away from society. You're done with them and you don't want anybody else to subject themselves to that abuse, so you like lock them up. No. Not those kinds,
yeah,
but you
know,
it's possible. So listen, that conversation, wow, half hour flew by.
Actually, well, 20 minutes because we started 7 minutes late because of Trish.
Because of her. Anyway, so we do have a guest. So we're going to take a quick break. We have some music. And when we come back, we have David Ellison, of course, joining us. I'm super excited about him. He's awesome. Like I said, I love his energy. So here's some music and we will be right back.
She was waiting by the back door. Said, babe, we gotta leave town. Get your shit, get your suitcase, your dog, your guitar, cause we gotta go now, cause they're coming. Well, they know our fucking names. Yes, they're coming just to say. Well, I know you don't want to leave your life. You've had some blood and tears, little joy, little strife. But they're coming. Well, they're coming down the road. Yes, they're coming, truth be told. They got a knapsack full of judgment, hypocrisy and lies. And they're talking so much hateful bullshit, they've begun to gather flies. But they're coming. Well, don't look them in the eyes. Yes, they're coming. surprise. And with so much terror in our past, how are you so surprised it's come to bite you in the ass? Yes, it's coming. Well, it's nipping at your heels. Yes, it's coming for the kill. Head out to the wastelands where we can change our names. Cause they're coming. Well, they know our fucking names. Yes, they're coming. Just the same. Just the same. Just the same. Just the same.
All right, welcome back from the break, ladies and gents. That, of course, was Amanda Barrick with her new song and her new album, Wastelands. That's the title track to the album, which just released on July 31st. The album is available on all major music services, so you can go ahead and go down and download it. It is amazing. It is not only music, but also spoken word. She's very talented, and she's also the daughter of one of our favorite guests, Linda Stay, who we've had for quite a long time.
Yes. Dookie.
Right. Dookie.
And Gay Penguins.
Yes. All that good stuff. So
she kind of had a Melissa vibe there. I liked it.
She's very talented. So she did, you weren't here that day, but unfortunately, she did a live performance of one of her spoken word tracks. It was incredible. It was amazing. So anyway, today we have a guest. Obviously, it's a returning guest for us. We've loved him ever since he came on the first time. The first time he was here, he joined us to talk about his book, Santander, Rambling on Borrowed Time. Of course, we're talking about none other than David Ellison. He was here, I would probably say, a good 2 or 3 months ago.
It was April.
Was it April?
Yeah.
Sounds about right, because I was actually here.
All right. So April it was. But nonetheless, David, thank you so much for joining us once again. You've got some news on your book, and including a couple of chapters that weren't originally written as part of the book, but you are doing that now. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. So welcome back to the show. It is our pleasure. I was talking to the guys actually before we started recording and before we went live, and I said, I love your energy. Right. When you joined us last time, your energy was infectious. It was very positive. Obviously, you've had a lot of life experiences that have really like taken you on a journey, and you have worked with so many different people and helped so many different like folks all over, your life throughout an entire period of life. And
you'll get there.
Yeah, I was like, oh, she's struggling. For our listeners, so you know, he's much more articulate.
I'm not. Listen, I just remember, let me remind
you. Are you going to say that English is your second language? Yes.
English is my second language, and I think in two languages, so it's a lot harder for me to articulate words in English, okay? So let me just say that. But either way, you've helped so many people with a lot of the work that you do every day, and even the work that you did back then. It was revolutionary back then, because, right, when you think about supporting LGBTQ spaces in education, that wasn't something that was, thought of in the 80s and 90s. And so your work helped a lot of youth and a lot of people. So I just want to thank you for that and also welcome you back to the show.
Thank you very much.
So
what you said, I can't help but just give a shout out to someone who came before me. And I don't think I mentioned this the last time. There was a fella who lived near me named Ron Schmidt, he was outspoken on behalf of LGBT youth with none of the support that I had. And years later, in a conversation, I told him not only what we had done, but of the amazing support we had received, and he began to cry. So I think it was tears of just angst for all he had endured, but also tears of joy that things had changed, at least for me and for the kids in my district.
That's pretty amazing. So I want to jump to the book. I want to give, like, if you could give a brief overview again of what the book is about, then we can jump into why we have new chapters for the book.
Well, it's a memoir, and it's divided into three sections. The first section is just about my growing up and becoming me. The second section is about teaching, and the third section is about my travels. And so, Santander is a city in Spain that mm-hmm. features prominently in my life. And the rambling has to do sort of a double entendre with traveling and also with writing and babbling. So the first section is rambling about life. The second section, rambling about schools. And the third is rambling about the world. And I wrote it piecemeal over many years because I used to write a column for the local newspaper. And so then I put them together, sewed them together, and then added some chapters that hadn't been there because I couldn't tell my memoir without, for example, the chapter on my coming out. And voila, Santander.
And a lot of people don't realize that not only is it a city or an area of Spain, but there's a major bank also called Santander, which actually is a Spanish bank. And believe it or not, so a lot of people don't notice, but the company that I work for got bought out by a Spanish company. And now all of our banking has to go through Santander, and which is a Spanish bank. And it's very prominent in the Caribbean, in Southern American countries. They have a couple of branches here and there in major cities in the U.S., but predominantly it's very Spanish.
Yep.
That's pretty interesting.
Santander is a beautiful city on the northern coast of Spain. It's very San Francisco-like in that it's got, during the summer, it's very dry, and during the winter is when it rains and all the hills turn green. Mm-hmm. And it was where the Spanish kings and queens fled the heat of summer to come north to a beautiful coast and very cold water.
That's amazing.
So you wrote this book, but then you had a colleague reach out to you and say, you're missing something. There's something important that you haven't done. And that's why we have these new chapters. So if you want to like jump into that a little bit, that'd be great.
Well, we'll focus on the one chapter. He wanted me, we did in my district some training on LGBT issues. I was a mentor teacher. We called it the invisible minority. And we trained all the staff throughout the district and then continue to do so every year ever since because our superintendent insisted that all new teachers get the training as well. And so a friend of mine just said, great book, but you need to write a chapter about that. And I thought about it, and in a backhanded way, I did write a chapter about that, but I primarily wrote a chapter about the amazing superintendent that made our district great, made our district progressive, and that greased the wheels and enabled this training to take place. He was an amazing human being, and he also happened to be straight.
So tell us a little bit about the training, though. Like, what does it entail?
When we first started, I would say this, it was very, very controversial. Many of the administrators were terrified of this, and many of the more conservative teachers tried to opt out, and the Rutherford Institute, a very conservative think tank out east, threatened to sue the district, and our superintendent just said, bring it on. So it was a scary time. But it was, and so we very carefully kept the focus of the training narrow, and that was how can we ensure that every single student feels safe and welcome in our classes? And we told that the teachers we're going to explain to you why this minority needs special training. To a great extent, because it is minority, what are the special issues that it faces, and why do we need to change what we're doing? But the good news is that, A, you don't have to change what you believe. So we tried to put everyone at ease up front. And it's really easy to make your classroom into a safe and welcoming place. So that was our introduction. From there, I don't know, just interrupt me. I'll just babble on and sort of go on and talk about
what we remember. That's great.
Okay. The first thing we talked about with them after trying to put them at ease, saying, you know, if you're religiously conservative, you don't have to run for the door. You don't have to give up your religion. You can still be a great teacher. So relax. And that helped a lot of teachers sort of uncross their arms. Then we talked about something called the numbers game. And we just said, so how many LGBT kids are there? And we started with the Kinsey report that had the famous 10% figure, although Kinsey would have been horrified to see that figure used to actually count gays and lesbians and such. And then we juxtaposed it with another figure. It was called the Tanifer study, where they had face-to-face interviews with people where they had to give their names and addresses, and they discussed their you know, what they did in bed. And they came up with a figure of 2.7%. which the radical right seized upon to say, aha, see, there's very few of them out there, which I just said, no, wait a minute. You know, I didn't come out of the closet till I was 30. So if I had taken that survey, I wouldn't have been there. And secondly, most of the gay people I know are closeted. They aren't going to take that survey and do that. But I said, let's just grant that figure, that low figure, 2.7%. And we rounded it up for the sake of ease to 3%. If it's only 3%, well, in all our classes, we've got 35 or more students. Do the math. 3% means you've got at least one LGBTQ in every single classroom in this school. Now, if you add to those kids that have LGBT parents, those who have LGBT brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles and friends, now you're talking a substantial portion of your student population. And if you walk into every classroom knowing that that is true, as now you do, we're very confident that you're going to be much more careful with what you say, don't say, do, and don't do. And so we said, it's just a numbers game. We're going to grant the radical right their low number, even granting that. And by the way, I did this with a good friend of mine, Terry, and she's Jewish. And she said, excuse me, only 2% of the American population is Jewish. Does that mean we don't teach their history? Does that mean we don't ensure that they're safe and welcome in all our classes? So we just said, stop with the numbers game. It just happened, you know, there's human beings that are suffering.
Exactly.
It's funny that you mentioned, you know, does that mean that we don't teach their history? We've got a story queued up for later of Chicago. There's a city in Chicago, Illinois.
Illinois.
I've heard of that, Rockford.
And we'll talk more about it later. But there's a city in Illinois that actually is mandating LGBTQ history in their curriculum. Do you think that the work that you did early on leads to this type of victory for us in the community?
Well, it's actually not just there. The entire state of California has had to rewrite all its history textbooks to include LGBTQ.
And we get one page. Thank you.
Actually, I think they're going to do a better job than that. The trouble is we can't afford new textbooks, so we're still clunking along with the old ones. But eventually, I think they're going to bring out a lot of very important people. I just think any work advances us. And I always go back to Harvey Milk, that just coming out is the most important thing that anyone can do. And once you've done that, it changes the whole equation. So the more people who come out, the more normalized everything becomes.
I also want to talk a little bit about Guy Emanuel. Am I saying that right? Yeah. So
absolutely.
There's this quote you say in this chapter, oh, great. Now we have openly gay teachers. What am I supposed to say when parents call demanding their kids be removed from the faggots classroom? That struck me like so intensely. And then his reaction to what was said, plus what he did for you, I think is important to talk about.
Well, I mean, I just have to reiterate, this is in 1996. And the East Bay, even though it's in California, is still a very homophobic place. And so everyone was afraid of this. And yet Guy pushed it through anyway, simply because he couldn't stand if any kid, especially a minority kid, were given the short, given the shaft by public education. And he became aware that a kid had dropped out because he was gay, dropped out of his district and his schools, and he was furious. And so he said, that's not going to happen anymore. So he was very eager to have us undertake this training. And he was in a very unique position because he when he retired, he was the longest standing superintendent in California history. And he worked his way up slowly with one object in mind, and that was to transform this district from a horrible one into a great one. And he succeeded. So I hope you can just, I just had tremendous admiration for the man. But he knew how volatile this would be. So the first thing he did is he met with each one of the board members one at a time, beginning with the one that he knew was going to be a tough sell. And he said, you got to be on the page with me. Then he had a meeting with all his administrative team to say, Terry and Dave are going to do this. I need you to be on board. And that's when one of them said, oh, crap. Now, what do I do when a parent calls, you know, because then Terry and Dave are now out. There are going to be other out teachers. Crap, what am I going to do? And the associate superintendent just stood up and said, well, what do you say now when someone calls up and says, I want my kid out of that N-word classroom?
I was and just thinking about that. Brown versus Board of Ed, the Big Seven in Tulsa, yeah. I believe, or Topeka. Yeah, exactly.
And he just said, just tell them, you know, there are other districts. And that's exactly when the radical right teachers protested before the board. The board just sat there stolidly, listened to them. And then Guy, the superintendent, got on and said, excuse me, this is a done deal. This fulfills our mission as a district. If you cannot get on board, then you probably need to find someplace else to teach. Next issue. And so we went ahead with the training. But we were scared. I won't kid you, but
you said that in the chapter too. I mean, excuse me. But when you went to Guy, you said that you thought he was progressive, but you weren't sure. What was that like for you?
Oh God. I mean, this goes back to just my own coming out story. I lived completely closeted even to myself until I was 30. Mm-hmm. And then I finally went to a therapist and he was actually quite, I mean, I was so lucky to get this guy, but he was trying to say, listen, if you're going to live a healthy life, you just have to be yourself. And I remember just thinking in horror, oh my God, if I were gay, and I'm not, but if I were, I would maybe perhaps come out to a few close friends and that would be it. And that's how I started. And what's amazing is that a few, maybe 3-4 years later, here I am conducting these trainings, coming out to not only my staff, but I mean to everyone. So life is full of surprises and miracles. And I used to tell my students that you cannot imagine what life has in store for you, all the great things. But I couldn't imagine coming out of the closet. And now I couldn't be more open. And that's what it was.
Once you get that taste of freedom, just the slightest taste, that's
can't go back.
Exactly. Exactly.
When you came out and started these trainings, what type of clapback did you actually receive from parents? Was there a lot?
No. We had some pushback only from the conservative members of the staff. Mm-hmm. But most of the staff was very supportive. Mm-hmm. And so that was, that was just awesome. And you know, the latter years when we did the training, we used to laugh because originally we had to be very cautious with what we said and put the parameters. And in the last few years, we walked into what we knew would be, really receptive audiences with the new teachers. Mm-hmm. And which is why I love to say the next generation just doesn't get it and that there's a problem. And the next generation of teachers, the young teachers coming on board, they're eager for this training. They want it badly. And so the old guard was fighting it. The new guard said, please, please, please give us more. We want to be able to do this right.
And that's another thing that a lot of people don't realize, right? As the generations go by, being gay really doesn't become an issue. Or it is not an issue. But we also have a disconnect in our very young people in our community and our very older people in our community and the way they view our triumphs, right? How hard we had to work to be able to do and give you what you have today, and how they can't relate to that because they didn't have to go through all of that. And and so a lot of people need to understand that a lot of the work that happened behind the scenes, a lot of the work that happened in the 80s and in the 90s, and even into the 2000s, is a lot of the groundwork that people like you and fellow educators like you and people in that administered curriculum in education, in public education, took a risk in saying, we need to do this. But sometimes they sort of kind of like, they can't understand, well, why wasn't it always that way? Because seriously, that wasn't the way it always was.
Which actually it's a perfect segue though to talk about, like, you know, being insecure and moving forward, because in this chapter, he actually talks about the fact that Guy was about to retire. And so he was your biggest supporter. Mm-hmm. And in moving forward, you were worried about losing that support. So what he did was pretty powerful.
Well, Terry and I realized, we sort of discovered each other first. In fact, she outed me. She came to me and she finally just said, "Are you gay?" I was terrified, like, "Ugh!" But anyways, we've become dear friends. But we were both mentor teachers, which meant that we were leaders in the district, and we trained our colleagues on many different things. And we just realized, okay, we've heard through the grapevine that Guy might be gay friendly. He's about to leave. This window of opportunity is about to close. And I got to tell you, there's no way we would have come forward at that time if that had not been the case. It was merely the fact we said it's either now or never. And so we've just got to find the balls to do it. And as I put in the article, I still remember walking down. We made an appointment to see him, and the long hall, and I down to his office. And I just said, "Terry, we could just turn around and run out," because we were both really worried.
Don't do that.
Yeah. No, at that time, you could be fired for being gay. And so we thought at the time that we could potentially be putting our careers on the line. What we didn't know is that Guy was just fortuitously really eager for this to begin. We sort of came to him like manna from heaven. The backstory is, there had just been in Hayward, which is the city just to the north of us, the first ever gay prom. Mm-hmm. And that made national headlines. And then everyone said, well, why do they need their own prom? Well, that led to all sorts of interesting and important questions. And the local press had done a story about a kid who had dropped out of, oops, our high school, James Logan High School. And so that pissed off Guy. A, he hates bad publicity. Mm. But B,
who doesn't?
Yeah, but B, his watchword for everything he did in that district was equity, in particular for anyone who is minority. And he called that kid in for an hours long interview and just tell me everything. What was it like? At the end of which, Guy was spitting fire. And he had this tradition every summer. He had a barbecue at his house for his entire administrative team, all the principals and assistant principals. He interrupted his own barbecue and was shouting at them, saying, "We are complicit in the dropouts. In fact, the deaths of these kids, it is on us, on our watch. And we have to find a way to end this." And it was right then that Terry and I walked into his office. Mm-hmm. So it was just an amazing coincidence.
So how did you go about developing the actual curriculum that you taught to these teachers? Like, how, like, you have documentation, you have stuff you actually want us to share with our listeners. So how did you go about developing all of that?
Well, it changed over the years. We had some help because Kevin Jennings, who started the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, had just begun at that time. And so there were some resources there. And so we just scoured everywhere we could to see what had been done. And then we just sat down and said, what do we think our colleagues need to know?
Right.
And the main thing we realized that they needed to know is, why should they care? What are the risks that these kids run? And then the second thing is, well, then what can they do? We had to make sure we got those two things. And so the three biggest components. The first thing is, what are the risks these kids face? Secondly, what can you do to ameliorate those risks and enable them to be successful in your classroom and in life? And then finally, and this always brought down the house, was the panel of gay kids. And they always, always upstaged us. And they stole the show, as they should have. And just amazing courage that these kids, because they, I mean, all right, I came out as an adult. They were coming out to all their teachers.
Yeah.
And everyone, just amazing kids.
And the strength.
Yeah.
The strength that it would take for children at that time to come out and say, mm-hmm. I am gay. Right. We're talking about 80s, 90s.
That was me.
Right.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
There's this one girl, and you know, this is going back to 96. So but I think her name was Liz, but I'm almost certain I'm wrong. Anyways, she was on the panel, and we they had to do many of these because we had many, many schools, and we did one training at each of the schools, and it took us 2 years. And so a lot of it, we had many different panels, but you know, some of the kids did repeat performances. And to watch her transformation, the very first panel, she sat at the panel with her head down and her hair pulled down low, and barely, even though we worked with her, she was pretty awful. And four trainings later, she was, give me the damn mic. She blossomed.
Yeah.
And she became an activist, and you could just see her growing in self-confidence, because after all of these trainings, she took that risk, and so many of her former teachers and current teachers came up afterwards and just showered her with praise. Mm-hmm. And then she went home and went, oh, and you know, pretty soon she couldn't wait to be on the next panel. Mm-hmm. So we all went through transformations.
I have two more questions I want to ask you. One is a personal one, but one is for educators everywhere. Suicide and homelessness in the LGBTQ youth is a really big problem. Mm-hmm. How, as an educator, how would you train somebody or talk to somebody about identifying somebody that might be in a situation like that? And then how to move forward?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the most important thing a teacher can do is to make your classroom an oasis, a safe place, because so many kids, I mean, I think it was in Los Angeles, a police officer said at least 40% of homeless youth are LGBTQ, mm-hmm. which means we are way overrepresented, even if you'd accept the Kinsey figure of 10%.
Right.
Why do these kids come out and then they're kicked out of their homes?
Right.
And I don't know how much we can do, you know, to save a kid like that, because that's the kind of kid that's probably no longer coming to your classroom. But the most important thing you can do is identify, whether you're gay, straight, or whatever, identify your classroom as a safe space, either with a rainbow flag or a poster or just a small sticker. Because we used to tell our colleagues, it doesn't have to be big. You got to know that LGBTQ kid is going to notice, and just know is a safe space. Mm-hmm. But the statistics are daunting. I think it's nearly 60%. This is from the GLSEN survey that they conduct periodically. 60% of LGBTQ youth report that they continue to hear homophobic remarks from their teachers. And so many classrooms continue to not be safe. And so if you just identify yourself as just, you are safe and welcome here, you've done an amazing thing. And then, of course, if you can make your curriculum inclusive and stop the name calling in the hallways and everything, and teach them as teachable moments, that's one of the biggest things we taught teachers, was you have to intervene. You can't pretend you didn't hear it. You have to stop and intervene when you hear the name calling. And that, above all, will identify you as a safe and supportive person.
And that's something even in I graduated high school in the year 2010. Like, I've only been out of high school for 10 years, but I recall that. I recall seeing students going, my fellow classmates going down the hallways, you know, calling people gay and saying faggot, excuse me, but teachers would do nothing. Then a kid would yell shit or fuck, and they'd be sent to the principal's office, but teachers would turn a blind eye to it.
Yeah, no, I hear. Yep. You're not wrong.
Yeah. No, even in my school, which is very progressive, but, you know, I was moderator of the Gay Straight Alliance. And at the beginning of every year, we always had announcements saying we're meeting in Mr. Ellison's room on Friday. And someone in the Alliance stated that it was hard for them to listen to the announcements because then they'd hear the snickering and right. the comments. And what really hurt their feelings was the fact they heard it and they knew the teacher had heard it as well. Mm-hmm. And that stunned me because New Haven has become a very progressive district, but even so, teachers, even now, were pretending that they didn't hear. And so I ended up sending out a broadcast email to all staff saying the first announcement of the year is about to take place. The kids have told me that this is what happens in many of your classrooms. Please don't let that happen again.
Right.
Have you ever seen Love, Simon?
So important. Thank you.
The movie?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Okay, so I love that movie. And this is like totally sidebar, but that moment, like what you're talking about right now, that moment where the teacher stands up for Simon in the lunchroom, that's what I'm thinking of when you're speaking about this. And I thought that was such a powerful moment in that movie.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
but not enough teachers do it.
Right.
Right.
You know, I will tell you something very personal for me. I remember my fifth grade teacher. Her name was Miss Mealy, PS23 in New York, in Yonkers, New York.
Do you have her social?
I don't have her social. I'm not that Puerto Rican. And the reason why I remember this is because I remember being taunted in school for being gay, even at that young age. And I remember leaving. She said, the principal would like to see you. And so I left the classroom. And on my way back, I stopped by the lavatory, which is right next to our classroom. I could hear her yelling at her students for making fun of me of the fact that I was gay. And I never forgot that mm-hmm. moment. It was very powerful. It was very affirming to me that who I was, obviously this teacher saw.
Right.
And let me tell you, when I walked back into that classroom and sat on that desk, not one person ever said a word to me ever again. And that's the kind of educators that you need. You need educators to advocate for those who are being taunted, for those who are being victimized, because that's exactly what you are. You are being victimized for being who you are and also for the ignorance of parents that are teaching their kids that it is okay right. to go to school and make fun of people and say that, you know, this is wrong and this is wrong. Based on what you believe, I'm not going to knock you for what you believe, but don't bring that into other spaces and where other people might believe something else. And so she really took the time to educate, and not necessarily educate. I think it was just put people in their place and say, you don't do that. And you're not going to do that while you're in my class. Right. I never forgot that woman ever again.
But see, what we train, two things I would say, what we trained in our training is that needs to be stated clearly day one.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You don't wait later on. Day one, you say, this is the kind of classroom we're going to have. But the other thing, and I really want to underscore this, it's the straight teachers that have a special responsibility. Mm-hmm. Because whenever I speak up on this issue, people roll their eyes and go, oh, there Dave goes again. You know him. And I can speak with real power on the issue of race and sex and gender. But I cannot speak with power on LGBTQ issues because I'm openly gay and that scene is just my issue. But when a straight teacher does it, people stand up and take notice.
Of course.
I just said, those of you who are straight in this classroom, you know, in our trainings, I said, we need you to be outspoken on this issue in a way that we cannot.
Mm-hmm. So my last thing for you when it comes to these new chapters is actually the second chapter that I told you earlier I hadn't read, I read. But you talk about seeing a counselor. And you talk about kind of like coming into yourself in a way. But you also talk about perfectionism and why that kind of held you back. And I think that society places this idea of what humans need to be, what individuals need to be, and that's why they're so afraid to come out. And I think that you put it so beautifully in your book. I was wondering if you want to talk a little bit about that and that experience for you.
Well, I've struggled with self-image issues all my life. I mean, pathologically so. For much of my life, I've been incapable of accepting a compliment. And everyone who knows me, I just constantly put myself down. And I've wondered for many years why that was. Maybe I was Catholic, I was gay, and I lived in the closet, but I think there was something else. And so I've struggled all my life. And much later, I was going to a counselor, and I don't know what context, but I blurted out, this is what I said. I said, well, you know, the truth is that I am inadequate in every aspect of my life. And then I sort of just stopped talking and I listened to what I had said and I just burst out laughing. And I said, well, that's ridiculous. But of course, that is what I had believed. I was not a good friend. I was not a good teacher. I was not a good writer. I was not, I mean, just fill in the blank. I was inadequate, deficient. I was just lived my life with overwhelming shame. And certainly being in the closet had a lot to do with it, but I'm sure it was much more than that. And so I've struggled ever since, even today, to just fight shame and to fight, above all, perfectionism, because I realized that I would choose people like another educator who I admired. I'd set them up on a pedestal and say, that's what I want to be like. And of course, I never was, because in my mind, they were perfect. And every day I sort of compared my private with their public, which is never a good idea. And so I always went home every day saying, God, I fucked up. I'll never be as good a teacher as that other person is. And so I'm a failure simply because I'm not as good as someone else. Or, I mean, what a horrible way to live. And so I'm trying to become more Buddhist, in which you just say, I've got one responsibility. That's to do my best. Mm-hmm. And then let go.
And
just let go of, and as long as you're doing your best, and just understand you're never going to be perfect, then you can accept yourself. And I think I ended up, and I included this in the book, I was at some retreat or something where we wrote affirmations. And the one that I came up with was, I am gifted, I am flawed, I am human, the perfect me. Mm-hmm. In other words, part of my perfection is being imperfect, mm-hmm. being flawed. That's what it means to be a human.
Yeah,
but for me to acknowledge that I was gifted, that was hard for me because I was so self-deprecating. But I said, no, it's true. I am, damn it. Mm-hmm. And so for me to be able to write that down and tell myself I am gifted, but yeah, I'm also flawed. And that's okay.
I think that for me was one of the most powerful things that I read, because we look at our lives and we all know we're not perfect. What is perfect, right? But we all are our own perfect human beings. Mm-hmm. And the reality is a lot of kids don't see that and they don't have that support. And a lot of LGBTQ+ kids don't think they're perfect because society tells them they're wrong.
Right.
But the reality is, you writing this down and you being so honest and visceral about your experience will help so many kids realize that they are perfect. They are human. They have so many things to offer the world. And I think that was just like a really powerful passage in this chapter.
Not only that, I mean, it also lets educators know, any educator that reads this book, lets them know the impact and how important they are and how critical they are in that journey in that child's life. Whether you want to be gay, bisexual, transgender, or non-binary, you know, the fact that you have someone rooting for you in a position of power, right? Because we always look to those in position of power to tell us how we should live our lives. And if you can see yourself reflected in that, and if you can see yourself accepted in that, it truly changes your life. Mm-hmm. And so the work that you do is important.
I want to tie that back to the trainings we did, because Terry, who is Jewish, said, here's the difference. All right, the only 2% of the United States is Jewish. But I, you know, my kids, anytime there was, you know, something on TV, I'd go, oh, did you know he's Jewish? And my kids, I mean, they came home and were constantly affirmed in who and what they were. Mm-hmm. Most gay kids can't go home and get that. And that's why they are at, you know, really severe risk. Right. And that's the amazing power of an affirming teacher. Mm-hmm. Because many of these kids don't get that at home from the people who are most responsible to give it. And they're just longing for someone to tell them, you're wonderful just as you are.
Right.
Which is right. Something I think that's so important, because now when we look at different school districts are integrating LGBT history into the curriculum as well as books. Books are the most terrifying things to some people. I mean, that's why they have book burnings out there, when there's something that goes against them. So if you look at an educator that falls short or an administration that falls short, these books like this are going to start ending up in middle school and high school libraries.
I hope so.
They're going to. Indiana already started putting LGBT books into their libraries. And now, like I said, these schools that are integrating this curriculum into their, or integrating this history into their curriculum, these books are going to go beyond those who are falling short and who are going to really make sure that people in our community can realize that they are flawed, but they're flawed for the best reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want. So were you listening to the show from the beginning today?
No, you didn't send me the link. So
damn it, Trish. Oh, I am so sorry.
So I'm going to play you something, which is like perfect. Like, so we have an opener every week, and this week this was our opener, and I think it's kind of like perfect to like wrap this up.
Yes.
And yeah.
So God made men, and he was like, I can do better. And then he made women, and he was like, that's a little much. And then he made gay men, and he was like, yeah, that's the right one.
Nailed it.
I thought that was absolutely perfect to open the show with, because, you know, that's how I feel. I feel like I am a special kind of human. Like, we all are, right? Like, all we want, in honesty, is I'm not looking for your approval. I don't need you to approve who I am as a person, but I am seeking your acceptance. Being a human in this world and sharing this world with you. That's all I want.
And mimosas.
And a lot of mimosas.
I got you, Trish.
And so...
Do I have time for a quick gay-friendly joke?
Yes,
absolutely.
Okay. Leonard Bernstein is conducting a symphony, and there is two old biddies up in the, you know, the far balcony enjoying it. And midway through the second movement, the one woman turns to the other and says, did you hear? He's gay. And the other woman turns back to her and, with a look of horror on her face, says, is there nothing that man can't do?
I love that. That's amazing.
He is a genius.
And he's all about classical music. I mean,
but that was good. I like that.
Yeah, it's very good. That's funny.
That bitch probably claps between movements too. Bitch.
So, David, I want to first and foremost thank you again for choosing to come and join this hot mess of a panel here that we are.
So last minute too.
Agreed.
No. But, you know, you praised me. I have to say, there's a lot of kids everywhere that are tuning in to you because they've got nowhere else to turn. Yeah, and right. So you're doing a great service.
Thank you. But mm-hmm. I want to thank you. First and foremost, thank you for the decades of hard work that you and your fellow coworkers and your peers have done in ensuring that LGBTQ kids felt safe in their schools. And that you continue to do that, and that the work that you do is resonating and moving across spaces in America, because it is very important for our children to be valued and to feel loved and to feel safe in spaces in where they spent most of their youth in, right? Like we say, we have a second family. We go to work every day, 8 hours a day. That is our family. Our real families are secondary. We spend most of our lives at work. When children are going to school, they spend most of their lives, most of the next since literally from the time they hit daycare to the time they graduate in 12th grade or even go into college, we spend most of our time with strangers and people who we know that become our second family. And the work that you're doing is allowing for people to learn about their secondary families in these spaces and feel comfortable and feel welcomed and feel safe. And that is important. And
hugely so.
And it's a game changer. It's a game changer because we know that we are going to evolve as a species. We're going to evolve as a society, as a country, into a more accepting. I believe this wholeheartedly that we are. But we would not be able to get there if it weren't for the hard work of people like you every day that were in the front lines ensuring that these kids had safe spaces to do that in. So thank you very much for doing what you do.
You're very welcome. And I was blessed, so it was nice to be able to pass it forward.
That's amazing.
Well, we'll definitely have you back on. Absolutely. I may have just sent you a text message of a photo of me as a child, which will give you a laugh a little later. So, thank you so much again for joining us, and you are clearly a part of the Gay Talk family, so we'll hear from you again soon, hopefully.
Great. I'd love to talk. You know, we mentioned before about finally teaching LGBTQ history. I'd love to talk about that because I ended up starting an LGBT studies course at my high school. And that would be fascinating and fun.
Well, definitely want to pick your brain on that because that's where I'm looking to work. I would love to work at your high school, but in a high school in general.
Well, let's throw that on the calendar. Yeah. Nick, you and Nick can negotiate that. And we'll definitely make sure that you come back and join us again.
Very good. Thank you. I look forward to it.
All right. It's been our pleasure. You have a wonderful afternoon.
Take care.
I will. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that, of course, was David Allison again. He is the author of Santander, Rambling on Borrowed Time. It is, of course, a memoir. Travelogue, Reflection on Life. It's a good book. It's got two new chapters. So if you've already read it, you can go back and read those two chapters and make sure that you get caught up on his amazing work. I always have, like I said, his energy is just really, truly amazing.
He's great.
And,
you know what's so funny?
Well, yes.
A couple of weeks ago, I got a message from my fourth and fifth grade teacher. Did I talk about this on the show?
No. Did you?
Yeah. No. He messaged me on LinkedIn. He was like, you know, I just found you and you were one of my favorite students. And
unforgettable.
Well, seriously. Sorry in advance, Mr. Parnwell.
This wasn't the one that your mother wanted to beat up, was it?
No. That was in high school.
Okay.
But it's funny because, like, you know, teachers really kind of mold who you're going to be. I mean, your parents do as well, and your social environment does. But, like, teachers have an ability to really shape your future.
Absolutely.
And who you are.
Chris is going to be one. And
I'm going to be a fantastic teacher, and you know it, bitch.
If
Mr. Mattoon, what's in your coffee cup? It smells funny.
I knew she was going to do that.
Do we call him Mr. M or Mr. S?
Oh, shut up.
If any of you listeners are from the Mr. Mattoon smells,
I just got it.
Sure. So, if any of you people are listening from the state of New York in the Westchester County in the area of Yonkers, New York, and God, I hope she hasn't passed away. I really, truly hope not. If you know Miss Mealy, who taught school at PS23 in Yonkers, New York, send her my way. I really, really would like to take an opportunity in my life before she is no longer with us to thank her for all that she did for me as a child. It is truly unforgettable. I haven't forgotten it, and I will never forget it. So thank you.
All right.
Cool. That being said, we've got two stories we're going to cover, and then we're going to move into all the rest of the good stuff that we have to talk about before we end the show. So I'm going to throw it over to my two bitches. I'm going to start off with Chris. Chris, what do you have for us?
What do I have for us?
Well,
it's perfect from the conversation we were just having. Yeah. Trish actually saved the story for me. It is a little bit dated, but not too far off. It's only,
I mean,
but it's important for this upcoming school year. So yeah. It was actually back in July. That Rockford, Illinois stated that LGBTQ history will now have to be included in the school district's curriculum. Starting this fall, students will be required to learn about the historical contributions made by people who identify themselves as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender in Illinois and across the United States. So they're going to be talking about heroes across the country and then heroes that really made an impact in their own state of Illinois, which is fantastic. So we know literature such as The book that we were just speaking about, and other many authors that have been on the show. Hopefully their books will be hitting the shelves. And
do you think the Gay Talk Dictionary will be in the library?
Probably not.
No, probably not.
No. It's fantastic.
It's funny that you mentioned this, because I was having this conversation with one of our state reps regarding LGBTQ education history in schools. And I would like to see the efforts made in Rockford, Illinois, spread like wildfire. Even like, for example, in the state of California, our guest David Ellison is from there. He was stating that, you know, it is something that they're actively working on and have been for decades. And this needs to happen. And no more importantly so in areas of the South.
Right. You know, I mean, like,
or in the Bible Belt too, Indiana.
Of course.
The reality is, it's sad that I didn't really know the impact of Harvey Milk and his story and the impact of Gilbert Baker and all of these people until really we started this show.
Right. That's right.
I mean, like, I have always been like semi-vocal activist in a way, very openly gay, but never had the opportunity to learn about the people that paved the way for us. And they are really important people, not only to us, but to America in general, to the history of America, to the history of the world. And it's not just here, it's everywhere.
Of course, because that movement literally was the catalyst for other people in other worlds, in other countries, other worlds, look at me, where the hell am I?
On another
the Milky
world.
Way, in another world. No, other countries, and right, to follow suit and really start to promote and open the conversation for accepting the fact that we're here and we're queer and we're not going anywhere. And you better get your fucking ass used to it.
And there is a shout out I wanted to give to one of my professors that I had at Gateway. I loved something that he did. He was my ethics professor. He didn't require a textbook. Not only does that help students save money, but it keeps it up to date, because that's something we were talking about in our past conversation about schools can hardly afford to update their textbooks right now. So even if they're writing LGBTQ plus history into the textbooks, it's incredibly crippling when financially to bring these textbooks in. So something that I really loved was this professor was constantly looking up new material and not requiring us to be bound to a textbook for 14 years. I mean, I believe my last history textbook in high school was dated like 16 years before I got it.
That's how long ago it was. Which is insane.
It is. Absolutely. So many things are missing. So I like that the style that this professor did with making sure that we have the most up-to-date thing. So now he can bring in part of the LGBTQ plus history into his ethics course. Damn it, Tom.
Well, which is important to acknowledge, right? History doesn't change, but history happens every day, right?
Right.
Every day that passes is history.
So
we need to update.
Here's my thought, right?
Yes,
so we love David, obviously. He's great. So why don't the next time we have him on, he can give us a lesson?
I'd love that.
It'll be like class on Gay Talk.
Right. That would be amazing. Like,
we're still going to drink.
We're still going to drink, so we're going to have to be allowed to drink.
It's
Mr.
adult
David.
Ed.
So, or should we call him Mr. Ellison? Mr. E. We'll call him Mr. E.
I'm going to call him David.
Oh, okay. Well, of course you are. No, but we could definitely have like a nice course. That would be amazing.
That would be fun
to see what he delivers to teachers, right? To see what teachers receive so that we can have an understanding of what our students are facing when they go into public schools.
And maybe we'll learn something.
We might.
We look forward to that, Professor. That's what I'm going to call him.
All right. Well, listen, and we have one more story, and it's coming from you. So why don't you go ahead and tell us? I know what you're going to say, but do we have to? But that's okay. Yes, we do.
It's kind of a negative story. Do we want to?
Yeah, do it.
All right, fine. All right. So we know that COVID is going on, and there was a grocery store and Wenger's grocery outlet. In Mifflinburg, why was the Berg necessary? Couldn't it just be Mifflin, Pennsylvania?
Well, it's coming from Pennsylvania.
German.
Germans
went there. They liked to have a Berg at the end of things.
But anyway, so like they had posted something about wearing masks, which a lot of businesses are doing. But they got a lot of flack. And they got a lot of flack because they said that LGBTQ people spread deadly diseases and sickness.
Nasty.
Like, they literally put this in their post. Like, in my assumption, make people not want to go into the store. But they got a lot of backlash for it. They also, like, talked about different things with the news media and how people don't need to wear masks. Their employees weren't wearing masks. Once they got a lot of flack for it, their employees now wear masks. They took the sign down. But the reality is, when you, you know, talk about the fact that LGBTQ plus people spread disease, one, you're wrong, 100% wrong. And two, the AIDS crisis has nothing to do with COVID. Everybody is affected by COVID. And also, everybody is affected by HIV and or AIDS.
Well, I mean, it's important to know, right? So a lot of people say, oh, you know, gay people don't know, need to shut up about the whole fact about AIDS and blah, 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 and COVID. We know what it's like to have a government completely ignore the fact that people are dying and they're doing nothing about it. And so that is the only correlation or the only comparison that you could make to the devastating effect of AIDS and HIV in the 80s and 90s in our community.
On my way here, I was listening to NPR, and there was actually a gentleman who moved in 1980 from, was it 1980? Yes, 1980 from Texas to San Francisco. Mm. And he actually was linking, talking about the correlation between the AIDS epidemic and COVID. He's saying that our community, especially those who lived throughout it, are more resilient because they know what it's like to avoid exactly. people when you're being sick. They know what it's like for people who don't believe this is an epidemic, or who believe that, you know, if you touch someone, then you can spread it. They know to believe science. They know that when you're sick, you wear a mask, you avoid people. They know not to go to bars. And I have people who even come into the bar I'm working at. They're like, I hate it. I have to self-quarantine. I'm like, you're not self-quarantine if you're out at a bar. So there is a link to this, and it's just linking also in a political way. When you look at, I believe it was in 1986 when Ronald Reagan first said that he's going to really call on the on HHS to put all the resources forward to combat the AIDS epidemic. Now our president is finally deciding that, oh, maybe this is a big deal. So there is actually correlation between the two different epidemics.
At the same time, you're right. But like the thing is, it's like I grew up, you know, I was born in 87. I grew up so afraid of HIV and AIDS. I grew up thinking, like, knowing at a certain point that I was gay, that, like, oh, well, if I act on this, I'm gonna get sick. Mm-hmm. And, like, the fact of the matter is that's not true. If you're safe and if you're smart, that's not true.
But
and
it was anybody, true back then, right?
That was the
uneducated truth that was being spread back then.
The point that I'm trying to make is that that's how I grew up and that's how I was feeling. That's why I was so scared about acting on my sexuality. And now we have kids going into a grocery store and seeing something like this that could be LGBTQ plus or could be on the verge of coming out or could be whatever. And they're seeing some fucking ignorant asshole posting something at a fucking grocery store telling them that they're the ones that are spreading deadly diseases. That's not true. It's coming from everywhere. It's not just gay people. And that fuck off that they would pin it on.
Well, you know, historically we've seen in where, for example, whenever something was happening, you know, you're very crazy religious, like alt-right religious people would come out and say this is God's way of punishing us for allowing homosexuality in our country or stupid shit like that, right? And the most important thing that we need to remember is that we've already been through this shit before. And so you can go ahead and try that little game. It's not going to work. We know what we need to do. Do you know what you need to do? Because your ass is going to be on a ventilator in like 2 weeks, just to let you know. We are very cautious. We've been through this. I mean, we've known that people that came before us went through this. It has been ingrained in our culture, in our community, how important it is to be vigilant when government won't do for you, we need to do for ourselves.
And can I also say one more thing about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
The AIDS epidemic probably would have been just as bad if things were different. But back then, people were having unprotected, unsafe sex because they couldn't be out and open and proud about who they were. So they were hiding themselves and having sex without the right, protection but and information.
In the 70s and 80s, it was like the sexual revolution. Everybody was having unprotected sex, even straight people. I mean, when you think about the Woodstock era in the late
1969,
and into the 70s, like it was the flower power and let's smoke weed and pot and have a good time. And so, you know, a lot of people really didn't think about contraception in the way that we think about contraception today, or even protection for that matter. Mm-hmm. So it was a completely different era. And so when you think about how AIDS and HIV impacted our community, that was as a result of what was already happening from a societal perspective back then. It was just how you had sex. You know, condoms were promoted as a way of contraception, not as a way of preventing STDs. Later on, when AIDS happened and all these other things happened, it was learned and came to be that, you know, this is what you should be using to prevent the transmission of a sexually transmitted disease. But it wasn't really something that was enforced nor clarified back in the 60s and 70s when we were going through the sexual revolution.
I also, the last thing I'm going to say about this, because it's like super like intense and negative, is that we, to even compare something like COVID to the AIDS epidemic, it's like, it's similar, but it's fucked up. I mean, like 450,000 Americans died.
That's right.
From AIDS.
And over 4 million people have been infected.
And like, we're battling something right now. Why do we have to pigeonhole another group of people and say, well, they're the ones spreading the disease, when in reality, it's your Karen and Kens that are spreading the fucking disease?
Like, seriously.
Don't minimize what our fucking community, what the LGBTQ plus community went through, what lesbian nurses did to support all of the gay men dying in hospitals. Don't fucking minimize all those lives lost.
Well, what do you expect? These are people who think the earth is flat. These are just people who don't understand science, so there has to be a scapegoat. COVID is not a disease. It was caused by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Like, that's what they speak and stand by.
It doesn't help that you have someone in the executive office right now that is perpetuating the behavior and the lies and the theories that are currently going around in regards to COVID. It's a serious thing. Wear your goddamn mask, wash your freaking hands, and wash your ass.
And we're not sitting here minimizing the fact that COVID is a problem. COVID is a fucking serious problem.
It's an huge epidemic.
But do not compare it to what the gay community went through in the 80s. Do not. And do not blame the fucking gay community, because it's not our fault. Shit happens.
Yeah.
And this has nothing to do with us.
Yeah.
It's not technically a sexually transmitted disease, even though it can be now.
Yeah.
The reality is,
this
has nothing to do with HIV. This has nothing to do with AIDS. This has to do with the fact that people aren't following protocol.
Again, the only thing that we can tell you is we know what to do. We've been there before. We've been there before where our government has refused to act the way they should have. You know, I can tell you right now that had we acted back in February or March when we were supposed to and shut it all down, we may not have had the amount of people that died or the amount of cases that have been reported to date. So that being said, it was a great show today. Amazing. Early on conversation. Obviously, David Ellison, our guest tonight, was just super. So we're going to wrap things up and we're going to bring it home. So before we do that, we've got two more things. Of course, our Gay Talk tournament on this date in gay history. So I'm going to toss it over to Trish for our Gay Talk term for today.
Well, actually, I'm going to do something first.
Yeah.
Mama Kim's Minute, everybody.
So you don't need a timer. There's only three on here. Be good.
Thank you. Okay. So number one, Mike Pence's campaign bus crashed into a dump truck. Sounds about right.
Dump Trump! Dump Pence!
Minutes later, the motorcycle wrecked again. So, dump truck,
Pence. Motorcade.
Dump all Pence. I have to say. Number two, John Lewis's motorcycle stopped at...
Motorcade!
Motorcade.
That's the second time you said it.
What is a motorcade?
A motorcade. It's like his convoy of vehicles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Stopped at a rainbow crosswalk to honor the support of LGBTQ plus people. Number three. Out Schitt's Creek, Dolly Parton win at GLAAD Media Awards.
Out Schitt's Creek. Dolly Parton. Oh, okay. Gotcha. Dolly Parton wins the GLAAD Media Award. Awesome for Dolly. I love her. She's just phenomenal. She's one of those people that just accepts and loves everyone. And so that's how every human should be
alive. I want my face to look like that at her
age. Oh, right? All right. Well, listen, before we go forward and move on to our gay talk turn for today.
Happy birthday.
I want to take a moment and say happy birthday to Mama Kim. It was her birthday last week and we didn't record. Actually, it was what, Friday or Saturday? But it was. And so we want to send you a really heartfelt and warm happy birthday for you. You've done so much for us. We've grown because of you and you've grown because of us. And it is truly an amazing honor to have you as one of our people here on the show every week. We honor you. We love you. And I hope you have many, many, many more to come. Indeed. On that note,
indeed,
happy birthday. We would also like to say happy birthday to our should have been guest today, but we couldn't because we had to reschedule. Dr. G, he had a birthday also last week, and we weren't recording. So we want to say happy birthday to our favorite doctor. It is because of you that butts across America are just having a gay old time,
including my butt.
Yes. So happy birthday, happy Dr. birthday. G.
And no matter how much he ages, those hands still look young.
Oh, you felt them. I'm so jelly. I'm so jelly. So happy birthday to them both. Thank you for being a huge part of our lives and our show.
Huge.
All right, Nick.
All right, everybody. So this week's Gay Talk Term, of course, brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com,
is packaged goods. Well-dressed beauty. One great advantage of packaged goods is that you get to remove the wrappings.
Well, it's not you as of late, you know.
Well, I know. I haven't dressed up anymore. But
I know. Yeah. It's like, you know, she doesn't have to go to work anymore. So now she just shows up in a tank top and shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Is like that a problem?
Yeah. I find it offensive.
Unemployment.
I'm gonna rip it off of her. Anyway. Chris?
So, on this day in gay history, brought to you, of course, by
GayRealEstate.com.
It sounds like a sad one, but it's actually not. It's not a sad one. So, on this day in gay history, August 3rd, 2011, in France, the death of the last known homosexual Holocaust survivor, or the last known homosexual Holocaust survivor, had passed away. Now, the reason I say it's not sad, I mean, it's sad that he passed away, is because he lived to 98 years old.
Bless
so it was Rudolf Brazda who died, again, 98 years old. Brazda spent nearly 3 years at the Buchenwald concentration camp, where his prisoner uniform was branded with the distinctive, whoa, I just hit my thing to lower my chair, the distinctive pink triangle that the Nazis used to mark men interned as homosexuals. So not only did this man spend 3 years in one of the most deadliest places ever put on the face of the earth, but then he was able to, one, survive.
Can you read the second sentence one more time, please?
Because it says Buchenwald?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not a word.
Not a word. But like, how do you
maybe
just,
not
like,
the time
know,
to make fun of those
like,
things,
how do you
people?
Just know these words? I'm like, Buchenwald. And like, you're just like...
I study kind of, this stuff.
Buchenwald.
Anywho, again, Brazda survived Buchenwald and was able to live 98 years. So
that's amazing.
That's why I say it is an uplifting thing that even the Nazis couldn't bring this man down. So,
claps for him.
Yes.
Rest in peace. So may he rest in peace. All right. Well, ladies and gents, thank you so much for joining us on today's show. If you like our show, make sure you go subscribe, rate and review on your favorite podcasting service. Doing so allows you to get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as our episodes are published. And you can also support us on Patreon. Patreon is a service that allows you, our listeners, to support the show with a monetary donation.
And me, I'm unemployed.
And her. We collect those donations every month, and those donations can be in any denomination of a dollar or more. We're super appreciative at the fact that
stop playing with the pen.
She just threw the pen away from
that
me.
That was a Longworth Theater pen.
Fuck her.
Okay. On that note, Chris.
Next week, we bring the birthday boy back to the show, who we miss so dearly.
That's right.
Dr. G will come back to the show for this month's Tales from the Tale.
Yes, queen.
And thank you to our guest, David Ellison. All the information for his book will be on tonight's post, including all of the information about his trainings.
That's right.
And don't forget, you can get your discount for the Future Method today. Each time you clean out with water or enemas, delicate tissues are harmed and cells are damaged, increasing chances of injury and or STDs. The first of its kind, doctor-developed formula that gently cleanses before you play without hurting your bum. And now you can use code GAYTALK20 for 20% off, valid for one purchase and or on a subscription per person.
Yas, queen. All right. Well, listen.
I still want to record that. That's a lot to say.
That is a mouthful. Speaking of mouthful, and to keep your mouth from getting full, can we put a rubber on it, please?
Yes, please. Thank you.
All right. Let's make those mouths empty. All right, ladies and gentlemen, as always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio. I don't know why I have to keep reading that. I've been saying it for like 3.5 years now.
I know, same, right? Nick announces. Right? Exactly. You can find us on social media. Facebook, GayTalk 2.0. Twitter, at GayTalk 20. You can email us at GayTalk2.0@gmail.com, but I missed Instagram, GayTalk 2.0. So, Tom, I fucked that up. Take it away.
All right. Don't fuck it
maybe
up.
Keep
I was waiting for him to say,
Tom. Maybe just read it.
Yeah, I
maybe
should
just read it. Just read it.
I was waiting for him to say, Tom, don't fuck it up. Well, if you need to reach out to us, you can do so by heading on over to our website.
She fucked it
GayTalk20.com under... contact us right at the top of your web browser.
Fuck
there you
again.
Can leave comments, you can suggest topics, you can leave a question for the cast or for the asshole that's sitting on the left side of me.
That wasn't right.
I love
out.
Him. Yeah, no, of course. You can also
she fucked it up again.
You can also leave a question via voicemail. We can answer your question on the show. Just call 334-GAY-TALK if you need those numbers.
The digits.
It is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
6:30.
And you can access that live stream at 6 p.m.
Yeah, why haven't you fixed that yet? Maybe stop reading. Decide when to read and when not to read. Yeah. At the end of the day, you both fucked it up.
Anyway. I said 6. She said 6:30. We got this. Anyway, don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gents, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a fantastic night. Bye! Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.